Instacart makes grocery shopping easier. And just because you're not doing the shopping yourself doesn't mean you don't care how it's done. With Instacart's shopper notes, you can get particular about what you want right in the app. Like rotisserie chicken that's extra crispy, cheddar that's sharp as your skates, and lettuce you'd actually pick yourself. Just leave a note for your shopper so they can get it right for you without having to ask. That way, you can get groceries just how you like. Download the Instacart app and shop today.
Up and Vanished in the Midnight Sun is released every Thursday and brought to you absolutely free. But for ad-free listening and exclusive bonuses, subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus at tenderfootplus.com or on Apple Podcasts. Up and Vanished in the Midnight Sun is intended for mature audiences and may include topics that can be upsetting, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, rape, and murder. The names of survivors have been changed for anonymity purposes. Testimony shared by guests of the show is their own and does not reflect the views of Tenderfoot TV or Odyssey. Thank you so much for listening.
Welcome back to Up and Vanish Season 4 in the Midnight Sun. It's time to finish what I started. This is the first time I've ever covered two cases in the same season. Florence Akpialik and Joseph Balderas. Two names, two mysteries, in one central place. Nome, Alaska. I know it's been a while, and I want to be honest with you. The break we took wasn't because this story faded. It's because new stories came roaring back to life. Cases from earlier seasons that couldn't wait any longer. Real updates, real consequences, and people connected to these stories who passed away, gone, before we got the full truth. I've learned that you don't just walk away from these cases. As Mark Smerling once told me, you don't get to clock out of this work like you're bagging groceries. These people stay with you forever. And even now, while recording this very episode, someone from Nome reached out to me with new information about Florence. This isn't a story I'm telling from a distance. I'm still very much in the center. In this episode, we're going to catch you back up, and we're going to listen closely to some of the tape we've been sitting on. Tape that, no matter how many times we play it, something keeps pulling us back in. From Tenderfoot TV in Atlanta, I'm your host, Payne Lindsay, and this is Up and Vanished in the Midnight Sun.
Nome, Alaska, a town where stories freeze and then disappear. For some, it's the last stop on the edge of the earth.
She had reportedly last been seen on West Beach. From that point on, we were doing updates on a daily basis as to what was happening with the search efforts.
This season on Up and Vanished, Payne Lindsay arrived in Nome to investigate not one, but two missing persons cases. Both unsolved, both haunting. Her name was Florence Akpialik, a 33-year-old native Inupiaq woman. After becoming pregnant, she moved from the small village she grew up in to Nome, in search of better care for her daughter. Allegedly, she was last seen near a bar on Front Street headed towards West Beach, never to return. She left behind her shoes, jacket, and a family who has never stopped looking.
I feel like someone is responsible for getting rid of her. Whether it was an accident and they didn't want to get in trouble for how it looked, or if it was an intentional incident, she was harmed. Somebody knows something and covered it up.
But when she disappeared, no one searched the way they should have. Not at first. Not seriously. Not like they would have for someone else.
My reporter and I were covering this nonstop because we've seen enough instances leading up to this to know that if there's not action taken within a certain time frame, If there's not some sort of accountability with the police department, this could easily get swept under the rug. Another Alaska Native person is missing, and that is what it is, and then nothing happens.
And when Payne arrived in Nome, Florence's name was barely being whispered. Then, there was Joseph Balderas, 36 years old, drawn to Nome by both work and passion for the outdoors.
Welcome to Alaska.
This is it. This is my little piece of home here. That's open ocean out there. You can certainly feel the magnitude of the ocean when you're on this. You don't really want to fuck around out there. Gives me the heebie-jeebies just being out here.
In June 2020, Joseph disappeared after a night out. His car was found on an isolated stretch of Nome Council Highway near mile marker 44. There was some fishing gear and a pair of waders in his truck, but not much else. No signs of struggle. No Joseph.
Everybody was pretty consistent about what they said about Joseph. They described him as a very charismatic, smart guy who loved Alaska and had, you know, a lot of plans for the future, had met this woman in Juneau, Megan Ryder. They were planning to get married. He had spent several years working as a law clerk to judges, and he was ready to transition from that kind of work into a law practice. So he was going to open a practice in Juneau, and he and Megan were going to get married. There was, you know, nothing negative that I found in researching Joseph, nothing that, you know, raised red flags for me. He just seemed like a super nice guy that everybody liked, a guy with a lot of plans and, a lot of stuff going on.
There have been suggestions from law enforcement that he was eaten by a bear or fell into a portal, but Payne didn't buy that. And neither did the people who knew him.
He's talked to me about her. He was very in love with her. He would text her right away. She sent us all the messages. I mean, they're like, there is no wait time. If she messaged him, he messaged her right back.
Good morning, Meg. I hope you have a good Friday. In fact, I know you will. I'm sure Cafe International is going to be hopping today, and I'm sure you're going to have a good lunch, and I'm sure you're going to have good walks and a good hike. But I just wanted to say also that I love you and have a great day, babe. Bye.
Two people gone in a sparsely populated town. One, an Alaska Native mother whose case was almost invisible. The other, a man working in the court system, hoping to soon start his own law firm. Both disappeared without a trace. And the one thing they shared? No.
Had she just simply walked off and died, we would have found her.
That scenario that he was attacked by a bear, somehow the body was hidden, that just seemed unlikely. And so it was worth looking into. The more you look into it, the more unanswered questions and red flags there were.
Nome has seen dozens of people vanish, most of them Native, most of them women, and most of them ignored. When Payne started asking questions, he hit a wall of silence. Officials didn't want to talk. Locals were hesitant. And a history of distrust between indigenous communities and law enforcement loomed over everything.
Please turn those videos into the department.
Okay.
Okay.
We're scared. Yes, we're scared everywhere we go because somebody's usually following me.
Yes, ma'am. I understand that. We do.
We're recording everything because we don't trust anybody.
The police department, they neglected her. They neglected Flo in every way, shape, and form. And I'm really mad about it. They judge Native. I think that there could be human trafficking, sex trafficking, and somebody's holding a secret and they're not telling. They're not gonna tell anything. I think they killed her, and they got away with it. If you know the history of Nome, there has been a lot of people missing. We all believe these people are going to do it again.
But then, slowly, people started talking. And Payne realized these two disappearances weren't just parallel mysteries. They were pressure points. And something was starting to crack. Two disappearances, one town. And with each episode of Up and Vanished, a question echoed louder. Is this just coincidence? Or is Nome hiding something deeper? Florence's story was the quieter one, until you really listened. She was last seen on West Beach, just outside of town, the place where her shoes were found, where the tide pulls things away. The search started late, too late.
I don't want to bash anyone, but it feels like the police department priority of cases is not based on the protection of the actual people that live there.
The FBI stepped in, but even then, answers didn't come. The Alaska Native community had seen this before. A woman goes missing. The family begs for help, and the silence settles in again.
I started looking into Nome, and long history of public complaints about mistreatment of Alaska Native people by police. Women and girls in Alaska faced 4 times the national average of homicides. I felt it was really underreported.
Florence became part of a pattern, a painful historical one. And Payne knew if this case was going to move, it wouldn't be through official channels. It would be through whispers, through courage, through the people willing to talk. Joseph's story spiraled in a different direction. The more Payne looked into his disappearance, the more confusing it became. He was last seen allegedly near mile 44, but the details didn't add up. His car was there, but some said he returned to town afterward. Others said they saw him Sunday, after he was already considered missing. And then came Jake, Joseph's roommate, the last person who claims to have seen him. Jake's account changed. At first, he said he didn't see Joseph after Sunday. Then he said he saw him Sunday. Then he said nothing at all.
I know that the timeline doesn't make sense to you, and we know that his roommate says he saw him. People are mistaken. It could be that. It could be that he came back in, forgot his phone. There's all these theories, but I don't have the answers. Nobody does.
The roommate's Sunday. Do you know what he said about that? Like, yes, I saw him. I spoke to him. I saw him driving away. Like, what level of commitment do you think?
They passed each other in the home.
Inside the house on Sunday.
Guys, I'll be happy to go talk to Jake again.
Jake wasn't just a roommate. He was also Christine's cousin, Joseph's co-worker and occasional drinking buddy.
Christine is important because she's the last person that we know saw Joseph alive. So she's a really important figure. Yep.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. As we observe Mental Health Awareness Month, it's worth remembering that you don't have to carry your burdens by yourself. Life is a journey with unpredictable ups and downs, whether it's work stress or personal stuff keeping you up at night, which I've dealt with a lot lately. It's super easy to feel like you're the only one without the answers. But the truth is, nobody has it all figured out. And having someone with you to offer support can make all the difference. BetterHelp connects you with quality, fully licensed therapists who work under a strict code of conduct. With over 1.7 million client reviews and an average rating of 4.9 stars out of 5, the results speak for themselves. Their questionnaire helps identify exactly what you need, and they handle the matching, so you can simply focus on your goals. If you're feeling anxious or stuck, remember that these feelings are common, and help is available. You don't have to be on this journey alone. Find support and have someone with you in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/up. Again, that's betterhelp.com/up.
Happy 250th birthday, America. I've decided to spend this semi-quincentennial as our founding fathers would have wanted me to, checking out the furniture America's waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, I know I can find everything from ultra-comfy power reclining sofas with genuine leather seats and stylish dining sets with convenient lift-top storage to best-selling bedrooms with over 700 five-star reviews and a feature-pack pop-up sleeper sofa with built-in shelving, charging storage, and those signature Bob-opedic seats. Because nothing is more American than a sofa that's a bed and a library and a closet. So, if you want to join me in decking out your house with the finest affordable furniture this 4th of July, why not stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Blair went down the beach to try to find her sister. This guy gives her some of Flo's clothes, but she's not there. I just know he was a cab driver in town and a lot of people didn't like him.
That's when Oregon John entered the picture. A mysterious man who lived on West Beach, a transient gold miner. There is no mining for gold in the winters of Nome. But during the warmer months, miners flocked to West Beach and set up camps. This was the last place Florence was seen, leaving the tent belonging to Oregon John. Rumors began to spread, and eventually he had to leave town. But Payne and his team eventually got a meeting with John, disguised as someone looking for a job opportunity. They talked in a bar, and Lindsay did his best to get as much information about John's time in Nome as possible. Florence and Joseph. Two names, two stories, two families still waiting. While Joseph's case grew darker, Florence's family stepped forward, stronger. They didn't want revenge. They wanted to be heard.
He took a mother away from her child, sister and aunt away from her family.
A daughter.
He took a daughter away from her parents.
The FBI investigation had stalled. No updates, no suspects. But the community was waking up. People began to remember the women who had gone missing before, the cases that were closed without ever being solved. Florence's name was no longer a whisper. It was a rallying cry.
If somebody abducts us, scratch them, pull our hair out, leave as much evidence as you can behind, and rely on the public to find them. Not the police department, because they're not capable or willing to. I've got a couple friends who were beaten up by them, but they were too scared to go forward.
Then, something else happened. Payne was scheduled to fly back to Nome. But 5 days before the flight, his name was leaked. A private flight manifest. Confidential. Somehow, people in Nome knew he was coming. They started talking.
23 hours ago, that's when I started hearing rumors about you.
Payne never boarded that plane. And suddenly, the story wasn't just about Florence or Joseph. It was about him, too. The message was clear. Don't come back. So where does that leave us? Florence Akpialik, Joseph Balderas, two lives lost to mystery. Two families without answers, and one town that has learned to forget. But Up and Vanish didn't come here to forget. And the people of Nome? Some of them aren't staying quiet anymore, because someone knows what happened. To Florence, to Joseph, and they're still out there. This is Up and Vanished in the Midnight Sun. Two disappearances, two truths, still buried, for now.
Did you hear about the Sonia Ivanov case?
I did.
So you kind of know the background between the community and law enforcement right now, and how it's been in recovery, but not recovering.
In Nome, grief doesn't fade. It settles. And the silence that Florence left behind is still very loud. Delia was the very first person to reach out to me about Florence. She's been the voice keeping this case alive.
Nome, Alaska, if you can envision, it's the hub community for all of these smaller, remote, people fly on really small charter planes. Yeah. They go to Nome all the time for medical. They go to go grocery shopping. They go for meetings and conferences and stuff. But Nome is like the Vegas of all these smaller communities surrounding Nome. So Nome is where the heavy traffic of indigenous people go. And then they either go home as planned or they don't. Right. That's just how it is there. Doing all of this research and trying to understand where are the issues and where are we lacking, where are we needing to improve, and what I've noticed is that if we are not honest and if we're not speaking the truth as an indigenous woman, as a single mom growing up in that culture in a small community, living outside of the small community in what they say is the real world, and seeing racism firsthand, experiencing it, how everything kind of ties into really what the MMIWG statistics are today, and how can we really approach it? Well, one thing is if you're not going to be honest and call the truths out, then no one is going to address it. No one is going to understand it fully if you can't speak the truth. And we have to speak the truth. And if anyone's willing to hear it, then that is them seeing us and our concerns. She had been drinking and she went to West Beach and continued to, party a little bit. And there was a witness that had watched her go in and out of this one mining tent on West Beach. That seemed very clear as a fact. And that is what the local law enforcement was also putting out there and asking for anyone to come forward with any more information. If it can happen to Flo, which everyone knew, she worked at the hospital and records, it can easily happen to one of us. So I think that is a clear example of why most do not feel safe in Nome. So it's hard not to think of Flo for various reasons. There's no justice. Why don't we have justice? In a Native community, why don't we have that?
Now back to the case of Joseph Balderas. We've talked to a lot of people in this case, but this next voice you've never heard before. Her name is Hannah, and she may have been the last person to ever see Joseph Balderas alive. She wasn't someone telling a secondhand story. She was there. She walked with him through the quiet streets of Nome that night. This is a new lead, a new piece to the puzzle that only seems to make things more confusing.
I saw Joseph the night before he went missing. It was around 3 a.m. My daughter wouldn't sleep, so I took her for a walk through town. He was leaving Soap and Suds alone. He told me he had plans to go ridge running and fishing the next morning. Said he was heading about 40, 45 miles down Council Road, right around where they found his truck. We stood outside the bar for a while talking. He crouched down, played with my daughter in her stroller. Then we started walking toward our houses. He leaned on me for a bit, just to steady himself. We split off near the gas station. I stopped to talk to some friends outside. Joseph didn't know them, so he kept walking alone toward home. We were only a few blocks from his place. And knowing him, he probably made it home. The next morning, I told my mom I'd seen him. Then Monday came, and we heard he was missing. That's when we joined the search. My grandparents had driven back from their cabin that Sunday morning. They saw Joseph's truck parked out on Council Road before 1 p.m., before anyone claims they saw him that afternoon. So when people say they saw him Saturday at the beach or Sunday at home, I don't know. And my papa, he worked dispatch for Nome PD, he told us the last outgoing message from Joseph's phone was around 9 a.m., Saturday. If he'd really been meeting up with someone, you'd think there'd be a text, right? He was our friend. He came to our house, our cabin. He took pictures for my daughter's first birthday. And then one day, he was just gone. No sign of him, no belongings, nothing. People disappear from Nome. It's not new. Some say it's the Ishiguks. Some say it's something worse. Me? I don't know. Maybe he fell. Maybe someone hurt him. But with everything we put into the search, someone should have found something. Anything. It's haunted me ever since.
Joseph wasn't some fleeting figure. He was right next to her, laughing, talking about the wilderness, making plans to leave town the next morning. Plans he never got to finish. Joseph said he was headed 40 miles out on Council Road. That's where his truck was found. Almost too conveniently. But the problem is, his roommate Jake said he saw him at home the next day. So which version of events here is actually true? They can't both be. And then there's Hannah's grandfather. He worked dispatch for Nome PD. He told Hannah the last text message from Joseph's phone went out around 9 a.m. on Saturday. Then, no more messages. No sign of life whatsoever. And yet, his truck was spotted early Sunday. And then there's Tom Moran. Back when Andy Klamser, the private investigator, first came to Nome, Tom was the city manager.
It is the 4th of October, 2016. The time now is 3:27 p.m. And you're the city manager in Nome, correct?
Correct.
And you know Joseph, or you knew Joseph, correct?
I did, yeah.
Do you recall if you were with Joseph on Friday evening? That would have been the 24th of June, 2016. It would have been just before the weekend he went missing.
When Joseph moved to Nome, there's kind of a small group of like a lawyer's guild, I guess I'd call it, and a friend of mine named Andrew Dunmire, who is a public defender for the state of Alaska, and now he is stationed out of Anchorage, introduced me to Joseph. So just by a long-winded way of saying that Joseph and I, when he first moved up here a couple of years ago, hung out a few times, and then it kind of, you know, for whatever reasons, he found a different group to kind of roll around with, and he stopped hanging out with the, for, you know, whatever reason, like I said, found kind of a different social circle. So we did not hang out socially, but I would see him around, and we'd, you know, exchange pleasantries. I think he was a big college football fan, so if there was something happening in the world of college football, we'd talk. So I did see him that night. I mean, it's so long ago that I can remember where it was, and I can remember about what time it was, but it was, he was with a couple of girls, Christine and Kim Piscoya. I think Kim's last name is Piscoya. I know Christine's is at Breaker's Bar. And I had been there. I went for happy hour with some friends when I got out of work at 5:30 or 6. I mean, this is so long ago that I can't remember exactly when it was. And I'd say, when I was leaving at 9 o'clock to go home for the night, or thereabouts, he was coming out for the night. So just, we exchanged pleasantries as I was kind of going out and he was coming in.
So how certain are you of the times? Because we had been under the impression that Joseph didn't go out with Christine and Kim until after midnight.
I would be happy to, like, check an ATM receipt or something, but I can tell you that often, you know, I know when I was out that night, and it would be not impossible, but pretty rare for it to be a 6-hour shift for me. So if I said 9 and it was really 10, there's a possibility, but I my belief would be that it was earlier than that. That's a relatively strong belief. I know, you know, when we first started discussing this, when we were on the search in the, you know, months or weeks or whatever that followed, I've always said that it was about that time. So even when it was kind of fresh in my recollection, I was pretty sure that it was a little in advance of midnight.
Do you happen to know of anyone who saw Joseph or his truck that weekend?
Oh, let me think. So I imagine that, like I said, the group of people that I was with would have seen him in the same context that I had, which was sitting in a middle stool in Breaker's Bar as we were kind of heading home for the night. I think, you know, I heard that, again, one of the rumors about the Piscoya girls was that Christine was interested in him, but he went and got this girlfriend in Juneau, and she was mad about that. I know her well enough to think that she's not a psychopath, but I just don't know. Thinking in my head, and I'm trying to think of justifications for why I think it was 9 o'clock, is that I wasn't partying like an animal that weekend, and I had a triathlon to do on Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. But I'll try to think about that and sort of vet that with this group of people that I go out for cocktails with.
Great, thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
All right, Andy, no problem. Thanks for the call. I'll let you know if I think of anything.
Carter's has your family covered for every summer first. First steps, first swim lesson, or first sleepover. Our clothes help kids and parents have their best summer ever, thanks to comfy design and easy dressing details. Generations of families have trusted our must-haves for babies, toddlers, and kids. Designed to shine season after season. Visit carters.com to shop the latest styles or find a Carter's store near you.
Everyone learns a language for different reasons. Maybe you want to watch K-dramas without subtitles or talk with family members in their native language. Your life is unique. Your language learning should be too. Rosetta Stone, the trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years, just launched Rosetta Stone Sapphire, a new app that combines its proven immersion method with the latest innovation in technology to help you learn faster, personalize your lessons, and have more fun along the way. Most language apps teach the same generic topics. Sapphire helps you focus on what you actually want to talk about, whether that's travel, family, work, or your favorite hobbies. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. You'll get unlimited access to all 25 Rosetta Stone languages, plus all the new Sapphire learning tools. Visit rosettastone.com/audio to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/audio and start learning a language for real.
Are you really buying a car online on AutoTrader right now?
Really?
At a playground?
Yeah, really. Look at these listings from dealers.
Wow, your search can really get that specific.
Really?
And you just put in your info and boom, car's in your budget.
Mom needs a second, honey.
You can really have it delivered?
Really? Or I can pick it up at the dealership.
Mom!
One sec, sweetie.
Mommy's buying a car.
Mommy, look!
I think your kid is walking up the slide.
Kyle, again? Really?
Auto Trader. Buy your car online. Really?
We're not done with Florence's case either. Not by a long shot. Her family is still fighting for answers. I want to revisit someone who's come up more than once. In this season, we've referred to her as Kelly. Now, I've heard a lot of stories, most of them rumors, and I still don't know what's true. But there's one thing I do know. It's time to talk about it. Blair, Florence's sister, told us about Kelly. And since I'm now pulling the cat out of the bag here, Kelly's real name that she goes by is Danny Girl. Remember that.
She apparently sent this text to a friend, who then sent it to Blair, and they shared it with me. This one says, Danny Girl from Teller said Paul admitted to her that him, Michael, and Paul admitted they cut her up after getting her high. They said she was screaming too much and freaking out. So they did that to her. Don't know if it's true. Fucking freak me out.
Now, everything revolving around Danny Girl is a little clouded. There may be drug abuse. There may be some truth. And there may be both.
Do you know someone who goes by the name Danny Girl?
Oh, I met with her.
You did?
I was at work and she kept calling me. And I was getting irritated. Because she does drugs. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't be a part of that. And then she said, I have to talk to you about something about Flo. Then she said no. Then she said, finally she said yes. So I told my boss I have to go. Mm-hmm. So I met up with her and I recorded it.
You did?
I did. When I first met with her, she was on the phone with the Bing, being distant. Then she started talking to me about Flo, where she's at, what she did, what they did.
Did you believe her?
Yes and no.
Why yes and why no?
Because she got hired to shovel. That's what she told me.
She did what?
She got hired to shovel for meth.
Do you still have those recordings and stuff?
I brought it to the police department.
You don't have it anymore?
I don't. That phone broke.
It's okay.
But yeah. I brought it to the police department. And they brought the cadaver dogs and never told us that they brought them until they left.
Where'd they take them?
To a house by Aurora Inn, where Danny Girl said that. She was under there and there was something wrapped in there, but she didn't know what it was. Something wrapped in the corner.
Who do you think is responsible for her disappearance?
John Curtin. The FBI said Flo's last conversation was to her friend. And she lives in a village. She told her that there was four people in the bushes and they were passing something around. And she asked if she was okay. And she said she didn't know.
Was this a phone call?
Yeah, it was a phone call. It was her last phone call. But on her phone, that was her last conversation.
It was the last call?
Yeah. And then her phone died at midnight.
Do you know who she was with?
John Curtin.
And who were the other guys?
Michael McCown.
On June 26, 2016, 36-year-old Joseph Balderas dropped off the grid entirely, and he's never been seen since then. In most missing persons cases, there's almost nothing left behind. No clues, no crime scene, just questions. It's why these stories drag on for years, because we're grasping at shadows. But in the case of Joseph Balderas, there is one undeniable piece of physical evidence. Joseph's truck. It sat in Nome for years, a ghost on the side of the road, frozen in time. And when I realized the only way to truly understand what happened was to get my hands on that truck, it's like a miracle happened. I found it listed on Facebook Marketplace. Joseph's truck, the truck. And so I bought it. But here's the catch. Right after I made the transaction and sent the money via Venmo, I realized I had less than a couple of hours to move it off that island or risk it being stuck in Nome for another year.
We need it off that fucking island.
Foolishly, I didn't think it would be this hard.
I have someone holding the vehicle for us now in Nome. Why is this so hard?
I thought Facebook Marketplace, money sent, done deal.
Shipping Nome, Alaska, premium auto transport. Nome is a city in western Alaska's unorganized borough.
We know.
But winter in Nome doesn't wait for you. Neither does the last boat out.
Nome's causeway serves as a dock.
Get to it.
As it turns out, shipping a vehicle out of the Arctic tundra requires about 6 miracles, a port manifest, and a goddamn time machine.
Thanks for calling Fit Your Car Now, powered by A1 Transport. For auto transports within the United States, press 1. This call is being recorded.
We were already way past the cutoff. Every minute that passed, I was picturing Joseph's truck, frozen in place, buried under snow.
No, I believe the cutoff was a couple days ago, actually.
Untouched for yet another year. This can't happen.
Let me put out an email. You know, I'd almost say they're going to tell me we're way too late in the season for this. They stop doing that when the winter comes. You know what? What's your first name?
Final destination of this truck is Tacoma, Washington. Please take a picture before you leave it.
Hello, it's Tracy.
Hey, it's Payne. Can you do me a huge, huge favor?
Maybe.
That's when I called one of my local friends in Nome, Tracy. Not a shipping company, a person. Someone who could actually do something. We had one shot, 1 hour. The keys were in the truck. Tracy had the address.
Can you right now go get the truck so it can make the last shipment out before winter?
I think so. Where's the key?
The keys are in the truck.
Okay.
At this address, I'm texting it to you now.
I can go get it.
Now all we needed was time.
Is it possible for you to drive the vehicle to the port within the next hour? It's the cutoff. Dylan, did you already pay and run the card? Cutting it close, LOL. It won't be fucking LOL if that truck doesn't get on that ship. I'm gonna put you on with Dylan. God, send it. On its way to Anchorage.
Somehow, it made it. And right now, Joseph's truck is sitting in Tacoma, Washington. And next week, we take it all apart. We forensically examine it on this podcast. And what we find inside might finally tell us something that no one in Nome ever would. Stay tuned next week for another episode of Up and Vanished in the Midnight Sun.
Hey guys, real quick. I'm on the road right now. We just wrapped shooting for a new show I'm hosting, America's Most Wanted Missing Persons. It premieres this Monday, April 28th, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Fox. And it also streams the next day on Hulu. So no excuse to not watch it. Please, please check it out. I promise you don't want to miss it. America's Most Wanted, Missing Persons, premiering this Monday, April 28th, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Fox, and you can also watch it on Hulu. All right, shameless plug is over. Talk soon. Gonna get some sleep. I'll see you next week.
Up and Vanished in the Midnight Sun is a production of Tenderfoot TV in association with Odyssey. Your host is Payne Lindsay. The show is written by Payne Lindsay with additional assistance from Mike Rooney. Executive producers are Donald Albright and Payne Lindsay. Lead producer is Mike Rooney, along with producers Dylan Harrington and Cooper Skinner. Editing by Mike Rooney and Cooper Skinner, with additional editing by Dylan Harrington. Supervising producer is Tracy Kaplan. Additional production by Victoria McKenzie, Alice Kanik Glenn, and Eric Quintana. Artwork by Rob Sheridan. Original music by Makeup and Vanity Set. Mix and mastered by Cooper Skinner. Thank you to Oren Rosenbaum and the team at UTA, Beck Media and Marketing, and the Nord Group. Special thanks to all of the families and community members that spoke to the team. Additional information and resources can be found in our show notes. For more podcasts like Up and Vanished, search Tenderfoot TV on your favorite podcast app or visit us at tenderfoot.tv. Thanks for listening.
A burst pipe, a dead water heater, the AC calling it quits. Who do you call? HomeServe is an easy way to handle unexpected home repairs with plans covering stuff basic homeowners insurance usually won't. Instead of scrambling for a contractor, you make one call to get the repair process started. Join the millions of customers who trust HomeServe right now. Go to homeserve.com/podcast for 50% less your first year. That's homeserve.com/podcast. Savings compared to renewal price, void in Florida.